Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast for June 2010, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a nonprofit source of information and advocacy for the student media, and we work to break down the barriers that prevent college and high school journalists from doing their best work. For more information about the center, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. Well, New York is a newspaper town. It's one of the few places in America, maybe the only place, where it's still not terribly uncommon for households to subscribe to two daily newspapers. So it's doubly surprising to learn that New York City schools do not lead the nation in offering their students opportunities to publish journalistic work. But that was the unexpected conclusion of research by a Brooklyn College professor, Jessica Siegel, who is with us today as a guest on the SPLC podcast. Professor Siegel is a graduate of the University of Chicago and Columbia University, and in addition to her many years of experience as a professional journalist, she is one of the organizers of a very popular and well-attended journalism training workshop for New York City high school students that takes place each fall at Baruch College. Last year, she started the website Newsstand NYC, which provides a resource and a platform for high school student journalists to learn and to share their work. Among her many distinctions, Professor Siegel was just presented with the Outstanding Journalism Educator of the Year Award by the Deadline Club, the New York City chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists, which recognizes her achievements in advancing opportunities for students to make their voices heard. Professor Jessica Siegel, thank you for being with us today. Can you start off by telling us about the New York City High School Journalism Program? How did that program get started, and what does it do?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me on this, because I've had so much respect for the Student Press Law Center for so many years, so it's a great thrill to be on this with you.
Right.
I started the New York City High School Journalism Program, which is a rather generic name, but in any case, about 2002. I just returned from New York from teaching elsewhere, and even though I got a job at Brooklyn College, was very happy teaching both journalism and education, I knew that high school journalism is where kids first get hooked on journalism, because I had been a high school teacher for 12 years, mm-hmm. and I knew that's the time to get kids excited about journalism. And I wanted to, in addition to my regular job, which is teaching college students journalism and education, I wanted to try to invigorate high school journalism in New York City, which I had a sense, but very inchoate sense, was kind of slipping from where it was when I taught high school from 1978 to 88.
Mm-hmm.
What I did, I started hooking up with people at Baruch College, which is another City University of New York College in New York City, and I started organizing these high school journalism conferences, which would happen once or twice a year. We'd get somewhere between 250 and 350 high school journalism teachers and students from the New York City public schools, you know, attending workshops with the outstanding journalists all over New York City. And I agree with you, Frank. New York City, I hope I'm not affronting anybody, is the media capital of the United States. And yet, that's why it was so sad that it seemed to me that high school journalism was on a downward slide.
Yeah, it's very surprising. Well, tell us a little bit about the website that you maintain. The site is www.newsstandnyc.org. It has links to some of the student publications done by high school students in New York City. What are your goals and your ambitions for that site?
And just to make your listeners clear, it's newsstandnyc.org. I just want
right.
so that they can access it. It fulfills a variety of functions. One is, yes, to make outstanding high school journalism available to students and teachers all over the city and perhaps over the country and the world. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also to link students within New York City so that they could potentially collaborate online, because, and I'm sure this is true with other urban areas, kids don't leave their neighborhoods. They don't get out of their neighborhoods. And I think even though I run this high school journalism conference, every year. I think there needs to be a continuing opportunity for kids to connect with other serious high school journalists in other parts of the city to share experiences and potentially collaborate about articles or share reporting. So, for example, if a kid in Brooklyn notices, and you know, we're currently getting 4% cuts of within each high school, sure, of budget cuts right now, and the state budget hasn't even come through yet. So what that might mean for a lot of schools is no after school programs, no maybe even no journalism programs.
Sure.
No. So it would be great for to have a kid in Brooklyn go online, find out what is happening around that same issue all over the other four boroughs of New York and other neighborhoods, and either get, you know, interview these people or perhaps collaborate, write an article together that can run in several newspapers. In addition, the same kind of isolation that's true of high school students is often true of teachers who burrow into their school, you know, spend a lot of time working with their students, especially journalism teachers, but don't have a sense of, other than this high school journalism conference that happens, who else is doing things like they are around the city. So, again, the website is in the process of providing a private listserv so that teachers can, at 11 o'clock at night, when they're going, oh, my God, I've tried to teach interviewing skills four times, I'm at my wit's end, what's another approach, since it's such a key skill for kids to learn, and hard, you know, and hard. So that at 11 o'clock at night, they can go online to other teachers and say, anybody have a suggestion for a new way to teach interviewing skills? Somebody can send them a lesson plan or suggestions about how to teach it, so that there would be more community, the more collegiality across the city, both for teachers and for students.
Yeah, that's a wonderful ambition. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the research that you've recently done and published, which talks about the number of schools in New York City that do and don't publish newspapers. It seems so surprising that a city of newspaper readers would not have the highest level of scholastic journalism activity in the whole country, and yet that wasn't what you found. Can you talk a little bit about what you did find?
Well, what I found, by the way, is available in a report which I kind of humorously entitled, We're Not Dead Yet, The Fall and Potential Rise of High School Newspapers in New York City Schools, which is available from the website. You can download a copy of the report. You know, you can also email me at jsiegel@brooklyn.cuny.edu if you want a paper copy. But, you know, downloading it is probably the best way from the newsstandnyc.org. But in any case, it's a report that college journalism students from Brooklyn and Baruch Colleges and I worked on for 2 years. We knew, and I know this from having worked in the public schools, that if we sent out a survey to all the high schools in New York, which number at this point and are constantly increasing, about 414, that if we sent it out in an envelope, it would probably sit in a basket somewhere, and nobody would read the survey.
Sure.
So I knew from working in high schools that the only way to really do this would be shoe leather, or I don't know what the word is, telephone leather, or the use of the telephone, to call every high school in New York several times. And in fact, from some of these surveys that me or my students filled out, has, you know, notated down 5, 6 calls to the high school to get through the right person, to get through the mechanized phone system,
right,
to find a good time for this person to talk, to persuade them to talk to them, and then find a good time to talk. So it was a very work-intensive job, but in the end, we reached 60% of the 414 high schools, which is something like 263, I believe. 60% of the high schools. And what we found was that only 50% of schools we reach have high school newspapers. Now, that's bad enough because,
right,
based on a report that two professors from the University of Connecticut did in 2007, 74% of high schools nationally have high school newspapers. New York City, as you pointed out, the media capital of the country, 50%. And then if you break it down by boroughs, it's even more depressing. The Bronx, which those of you across the country probably are aware, is probably one of the poorest census tracts in the country, has only 32% of their schools have high school newspapers or journalism programs. Brooklyn, 45%, Manhattan, 58%, Staten Island, 83%, Queens, 86%. So there's a range, but 50%, only 50% of high schools in New York City have high school newspapers.
Yeah, and even in Manhattan, which is the most affluent of the boroughs, and certainly one with plenty of educated parents who you think would encourage involvement in journalism, quite a bit less than the national average. So the question is, when you got out and started talking to teachers in the field, what did they tell you that explains why their schools didn't offer newspapers?
Well, there's a variety of factors. Some of them are national and some of them are, you know, specific to New York City. Nationally, and again, people listening to this who are, you know, teachers, students, you know, No Child Left Behind, which is a federal law which, you know, puts all the emphasis on students passing high-stakes tests.
Right.
That has put a lot of pressure on schools all over the country. In New York City, this has increased even more so. Our chancellor, Joel Klein, who was appointed by our mayor, Michael Bloomberg, has made test scores as really the sole way to evaluate student work and teacher performance. Student performance and teacher work is high-stakes tests. So a lot of principals, you know, have, because their jobs depend on it, have, you know, eliminated electives, you know, have, a, you know, provided any extra money they have goes into test prep. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is that experienced journalism teachers have retired, you know, the baby boomers, et cetera, and right. In their place, young teachers, some of them very committed, some of them very bright, but they're just learning how to teach English, let's say. Forget about, you know, the five-paragraph essay, et cetera. Nothing, with no experience in education, in journalism. In addition, in New York City, again, under the aegis of Chancellor Klein, large high schools, which many people think are more isolating to high school students and have a tendency to not service students as well as small schools, have been closed, and in their place small schools have been opened. And what happens is, and you know, again, there's a balance for in some of these areas. Small schools often are more intimate, but they also limit the number of electives.
Right.
Big schools or middle-sized schools, which would probably, in my mind, be the ideal size, can provide extra activities, electives, band, chorus, those kind of things, which have been really kind of eliminated and sort of cut to the bone, again, in preparation for these high-stakes tests. And then, just to add one more thing, all these budget cuts, which last year was 5% in most schools. Now there's another 4%, though one of the best journalism teachers in the city just told me that her high school, it's 10%. So I'm not quite sure how it's being divided up by school. Perhaps it's by the size, perhaps it's a number of other factors, but 10%, and her high school, Townsend Harris, is a First Amendment school, which means that the principal doesn't interfere with the freedom of speech of the teacher and the students, they may have to eliminate the newspaper, which is outrageous because
wow.
It's such a significant newspaper. But 10% budget cuts, what is a principal to do?
Wow, yeah, that's really painful because that school is widely known for being always respected and recognized freedom of speech.
Yes, of course.
Just, yeah, tells you how bad conditions are out there. Well, was it your sense, either from the teachers that you talked to, or maybe just from your own experience working in this field, that any factor in this decline of newspapers has to do with censorship at all, that administrators maybe just aren't comfortable turning students loose with a printing press for fear of what they might publish?
Well, it's interesting. This is one of the positive things that came out of this, in addition to all these grim results we found. A lot of the principals we talked to, including the ones who are new principals in these small schools, who are just getting themselves on the ground, who are trying to create some kind of community, get, you know, train these new teachers, et cetera, that many of them explicitly said they wanted high school newspapers because, in their mind, one of the things that made a school is having a high school newspaper. And what they asked for is professional development if they could find somebody who would commit to the amount of hours necessary for, you know, to be the journalism advisor and teach journalism. What they would require for these oftentimes new teachers is professional development, helping these teachers begin to think like journalists, and then to develop curricula to teach journalism. Because in my mind, you know, again, journalism is a particular kind of writing and a way of seeing the world and a way of approaching writing that's different from, again, writing a 5-paragraph essay. And the teacher themselves has to begin to think like a journalist to be able to teach it. So a lot of these principals, which would be counterintuitive to what you're suggesting, wanted to have a newspaper but didn't have the wherewithal and the training to provide to the teacher. Now, whether or not once it was up and running, they would be open to, you know, making their school a First Amendment school like Townsend Harris is another whole question. But to me, the first step is trying to get a newspaper off the ground first, and then dealing with the question of censorship. I also think that in general, unfortunately, for a lot of teachers, there's a lot of self-censorship.
Sure.
And I think, you know, even without the principal intervening. But on the other hand, I taught high school. I went back to teaching high school about five years ago, and the principal read every edition of the newspaper, you know, red penciled it, you know, et cetera. And, you know, for one, if you know, the worst thing was, in addition to any kind of changing of words and censoring, was that it made the newspaper come out so late because it sat in his office for so long.
Sure.
So I'm not saying that's not a problem. I personally have experienced it. But at the same time, in terms of the principals, there's a lot of goodwill to the importance of having a high school newspaper. And if we could get all these other things going, I think the question of lack of censorship and the First Amendment would be a step or two down the line.
Yeah, well, okay, that is an encouraging part of the study. Well, I guess, Professor, some skeptical people, right, the naysayers might say in the face of these findings, well, so what? So what if schools don't have newspapers? It's a dying industry. There's no careers for these people in newspapers anyway. So what's lost by not having a newspaper in the school?
Well, obviously, you know, a forum for different points of view for news, I think to a certain extent it adds to a culture of literacy. You know, kids are really interested to see what other kids are writing about, et cetera. Obviously, for the kids themselves who are involved, and even though I think the next generation of journalists, and in the case of New York City, the next generation of journalists of color are actually sitting in classrooms in New York City right now, which was my motivation initially in starting the New York City High School Journalism Program. But for those kids, working on their high school newspaper is a chance, A, to get hooked, like I got hooked when I was in high school, about journalism, about the chance to sort of investigate things around me, write about the world, get more, even more interested in the world. But I see journalism as a very particular craft and genre of writing and an analytical way of looking at the world. And for adolescents, especially, who are very self-involved, it allows them to step outside themselves, get a perspective on their own situation, and use those skills to delve deeper in order to understand their own world and the larger one. Now, will all the kids that work on a high school newspaper become journalists? I don't think so. But on the other hand, they will be provided with the kind of skills, much more than passing these high-stakes tests, skills that will enable them to go to and succeed in high school. And for many of these kids, they're the first person in their family to go to college. And it's not just a question of getting into college, it's being able to succeed. And I think that the kind of skills that journalism gives them and the kind of encouragement in the curiosity about the world around them are really key in helping them to succeed in college. So, like I said, I think invigorating high school journalism will help to give us the next generation of journalists of color. But even the kids that don't become journalists, that's fine. Not everybody can be a journalist, nor should everybody be a journalist. But they might be the next generation of sociologists, social workers, lawyers, engineers. I don't know. But again, these are the kinds of skills that they need to go on to college and do well.
Sure. And for that matter, maybe they'll just become very avid newspaper readers, which wouldn't be a terrible thing either. We could use some of them, too.
And participants in the democracy,
right.
You know, because I think a couple of those same professors from the University of Connecticut, the Future of the First Amendment, the study that I quoted, which said that 74% of high schools nationally, really made the connection to kids who are in high school journalism and made the connection to they are the same people that have a sense of the importance of the First Amendment, have a sense of the importance of being involved in a democracy. So they may be whatever their profession turns out to be and involved in the democracy that we live in, which, you know, to me would be fantastic.
Well, I'm going to wrap up by asking you an unfair question, which is, how do we fix this? Now that we know that we have a problem, now that we know that we have a lack of journalism opportunities in the city schools in New York, how do we bring newspapers into the schools, and how do we get students excited about gathering and reporting news?
Well, you know, I'm a teacher at the heart, as well as being a journalist, and so I think some of that comes from having really good, you know, excited, well-trained teachers, you know, and that's key in turning kids on to the importance of journalism. I think, you know, professional development for teachers, you know, giving teachers the skills to be able to, again, think like a journalist and teach journalists is key. There is money involved, which, you know, some schools don't even have a dedicated computer with a layout program. You know, I think there needs to be, you know, both through my website and other ways, ways for kids to, you know, make connections outside of their school so they begin to see the larger world. Kids know about the internet, but it's obvious that there needs to be sites that they can connect to around issues that they care about. You know, more opportunities for kids to know about high school journalism scholarships and other resources. You know, and a continuation of these conferences that I've been doing for the last 6 years are some of the ways, but not the only, obviously.
Well, let's leave the discussion there, but encourage people to go to your website and give that address one more time, please.
It's newsstandnyc.org, so it's newsstandnyc.org.
Wonderful, which is where the We're Not Dead Yet study, among other resources, is posted for your review. Definitely encourage people to check that out and get better informed about both the encouraging and the discouraging things that are going on in New York City high school journalism today. I want to thank you for being with us today, Professor Jessica Siegel of Brooklyn College, and thank you for everything that you're doing to promote the practice of journalism in the New York schools. If you want to learn more about news affecting the college and high school media, check out our website at www.splc.org. Subscribe to the RSS feed for our news alerts. become a fan of Student Press Law Center on Facebook and follow SPLC_org on Twitter. And if you are a student journalist or a journalism educator with any question about your legal rights, call our hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.